Hi, my name is Nigel. I'm a recent graduate from Georgia Tech, and I'm going to be talking a little bit about SNMP, the Simple Network Management Protocol, and in particular some of the issues that arise with the third version of it, which is the most recent. So one of the things I want to talk about first is, why should you care about SNMP? Why is it important? Because for a lot of people, it's not something you really see or come into a contact with a lot. And part of the reason it's important is because it's used pretty much everywhere. It's all over the place in places that you don't see a lot of times. For instance, a lot of servers are monitored with SNMP for things like load, memory usage, disk usage, things like this. But you also monitor things like switches. For instance, you can monitor the traffic, the amount of traffic that's going through them, lists of authorized hosts, things of that nature. You can also configure devices with SNMP. Going back to switches, you can turn on and off features. You can, again, modify those access lists. So if you have a list of authorized hosts, a list of MAC addresses of hosts that are allowed to connect to that switch and use it, then that's another thing that you can manage with SNMP. Other places it tends to wind up being used, power distribution units, uninterruptible power supplies, air conditioners, temperature sensors, printers, sensors for doors, all kinds of things like this wind up getting monitored with SNMP and in some cases configured with it. And the way SNMP typically works is you have one manager or several managers which then correspond with lots of other managed agents. So the motivation behind the research was sort of to look at the SNMP protocol because, again, it is in a lot of different places that people don't really expect or realize. It's really prevalent in embedded devices. It's really prevalent for devices that don't have very many other ways to interface with them. So for instance, they may have a web page if you're lucky, or it may have a COM port and an Ethernet port, and that's about it. Another reason we decided to look at SNMP v3 is because there hasn't really been a whole lot of analysis done on the most recent version. The previous versions didn't really have any significant security, but in the later versions they actually went back and they added encryption and authentication and all the kind of things that you would expect in a more recent protocol. So going into this, we decided that we were going to look at the protocol, see if we could find some weaknesses, which we did. And then we're going to attempt to exploit those weaknesses and then determine the best way to mitigate those weaknesses. So the SNMP protocol as a whole, the main purpose of it is to allow an administrator or administrators to monitor large numbers of agents as well as to manage them and configure them in a vendor-independent and mostly device-independent way. So for instance, you can query all of the printers. It doesn't matter, you know, which manufacturer makes them. Same with, it matters in some instances, but for a lot of the more basic things that are standardized, you can actually just pull them across models, and it's incredibly useful. One of the goals going forward in making the protocol, it's a very old protocol, came out, I believe the first RFC was in the late 80s, and one of the ideas was that it would be reliable in the face of network congestion. So one of the things they really wanted to do when making the protocol was not rely on PKI, or at least in USM, they decided not to rely on PKI, for instance. They don't rely on clock synchronization via traditional means. So they actually do all that themselves. And SNMP requests typically wind up falling into one of two boats. Their GET requests or their SET requests. They've later added some other functionality, but I'm not really going to talk about that very much today. GET requests are simply the way in which you read information from other hosts. So for instance, the manager may query the air conditioner and say, you know, what capacity are you using right now? How much cooling capacity? Is the compressor locked up? Things like this. SET requests are what are used to configure devices. So the variables, which are called OIDs or object identifiers, are set using SNMP set commands. And so for instance, you can set variables to do things like reset your UPS, and it'll cause it to reboot. Or you can do things like disable features. So for instance, if you want to disable the packet flood protection on some of the switches, you can turn that on or off via SNMP if you configure it. And so going back to the security mechanisms that SNMP v3 adds to the protocol, what you really find is it's pretty much the the sort of standard thing that you would expect. It's, you get, for encryption, you have AES and DES. DES, yeah, it's a little old. You also get things like HMAX using MD5 and SHA, which is, again, standard. When things start to get interesting is when you look at their key localization procedure. So SNMP, the idea was that you're going to be managing large quantities of machines, and you don't want to have to keep an individual password for each, obviously. And you're not going to have a PKI because they don't want to depend on that. So in order to localize keys, they came up with this unique device identifier called the SNMP Engine ID. And each device has a unique identifier, which it uses as part of the key. So the keys actually are composed of a hash of the password that you want to use and the identifier for that particular machine. And that's used as the input for authentication and for encryption. So the interesting side effect, though, is, or the interesting question arises of, how do you know what the SNMP engine ID is? How do you know what this identifier is for each host? And in order to solve this problem, one of the most common solution currently is to use discovery. Discovery is a process by which the manager queries an agent and requests simply the identifier. So as you can see here, and this happens before any requests are actually ever sent, typically. So the manager will request the SNMP engine ID from an agent. The agent will respond with it, and then the results of that discovery process are used to generate the SNMP requests. But there's unfortunately some problems with discovery, the main one being that because it occurs in plain text, a man in the middle can modify the discovery packets as they go each way. So for instance, if I, as an adversary, change the SNMP engine ID before the manager gets it, I can all of a sudden choose which SNMP engine ID it thinks it's using when communicating with a host. And indirectly, I'm choosing which localized key it's using. So for instance, an adversary can do things like choose a particular key that he wants to use, and he can force requests to use that key. Another issue with the protocol is that there's no real authentication, at least as far as the manager and the agents are concerned. The manager can tell that it's talking to a valid agent, but it can't tell which of the agents it's talking to. So the manager may, if it's talking to Alice and Bob, it knows that Alice and Bob are both valid users, or it thinks they are, but it doesn't know, it can't distinguish Alice from Bob or Bob from Alice. The only way that in SNMP v3 that agents can really be distinguished is based on IP address or based on SNMP engine ID, neither of which is a very good method. So the first attack we demonstrated was that of reading requests. With a man in the middle and a compromised key, an adversary can force the manager to use a specific key when encrypting messages. And when he does this, it's really easy to do this. All you really have to do is catch the discovery response coming back and insert the SNMP engine ID associated with the compromise key. And then from that point on, future requests will be sent using the localized key that's associated with that, which is the compromise key. So just to give a brief walkthrough. So the request goes out, the adversary just passes it on, the target, which is the target of our attack, responds as normal, and then the attacker modifies the response by inserting the device identifier associated with the compromised key. So then when the request is generated by the manager and is sent out, it's encrypted using the compromised key instead of the target's key. So now the manager, or now the adversary, can read the request. This is a little problematic for a couple reasons. One is the variables that are being checked in an SNMP GET request, the object identifiers, oftentimes they may be either manufacturer specific or they may indicate what kind of device is being communicated with. So for instance, there may be a set of OIDs for printers, there's one for UPSs, there's different lists of OIDs depending on what kind of device and which manufacturer you're talking to. And it gives away a lot of information about that sort of thing. Another one of the attacks we demonstrated was that you can actually redirect SNMP requests. Even though they're authenticated and encrypted, you can actually redirect them to other hosts without actually compromising the key. The way you do this is you need to have a man in the middle, and you need to have a helper agent, which is just simply another managed agent that's configured similarly to the target. And basically, what you're going to do is you modify the discovery messages as we did previously. This time, instead of using the SNMP engine ID for the compromised key, you use the identifier for the helper and all of the messages. And then you use DHCP spoofing to control the helper's IP address. So for instance, you give it a really short lease time, you pick from a pool of IP addresses and you assign them cyclically. So like, say you have Alice and Bob, and Bob's IP address should alternate between Bob's original IP address and Alice's address. This allows us to get the encrypted messages to Bob so that he'll actually respond to them. And one of the things you have to do to ensure that goes smoothly is you have to cache in between. So for instance, if the message arrives when the IP address is out of use, you don't want it to get dropped. Another interesting thing that we noted when we tried to do this was that the ARP cache does not stay correct because you're alternating IP addresses too quickly. So you actually have to send out gratuitous ARP requests to update the ARP cache. So I'm just going to walk through that real quick. So the manager sends out a request. The attacker can either simply generate one himself, or he can forward it to the helper by modifying it. When the helper responds, the attacker again modifies it, just simply changing the source field of the packet, such that it looks like it came from the helper. It came from the target. And then when the manager formulates its request, it's encrypted using the helper's SNMP engine ID, since it was the one that responded to the request. And it's also bound for the target's IP address. So it sits at the attacker until the helper has the target's IP address, at which point it's forwarded. The helper sees that it's encrypted with its key, sees that it has the correct IP address, and then it responds to it, and the manager gets the message, and everything seems normal. What are the implications of this? Well, for one, key localization is really ineffective. You can see that basically the adversary can choose whichever key he wants to be used for any request that's being sent out. So for instance, he could choose one key and have all of the requests that go past him use that one key. Another thing is that because the responses are indistinguishable from the agents, so to the manager, it can't actually distinguish who it's talking to. And because of that, that allows different agents to masquerade as one another. Another thing that kind of comes out of these two attacks that we showed is that you can actually just spoof responses if you have a compromised key. So with one compromised local key, you can actually spoof responses for any agent configured with the same password. And while we were mostly talking about SNMP GET requests in these previous examples, this also works for SNMP SET, which is what you use for configuring devices. Down at the bottom, I just have an example of Nagios, which is a network monitoring application. This is actually what we tested it against. So in the top part, you can see that we're querying for the hostname variable, the hostname OID, and it's coming back as helper and target, one helper for the helper, target for the target. And then after we spoof it, they both come back as helper, because the helper is actually responding to both requests. We actually turned off the target at this point. So how is this useful? What kind of attacks can actually happen when you do something like this? Well, if you have similarly configured devices in more than one location, you can actually redirect requests from one location to another. So for instance, if you have the door sensors in room A, you can actually redirect all requests for the status of those to room B. So for instance, if I opened the door during off hours, whereas normally you would get a page or something through Nagios, instead the request is going to go to room B, it's going to see that the door is shut, and it's going to think that everything's okay. There's other problems too. So for instance, if you want to go and you want to shut down your power distribution unit remotely, so let's say you send it via SNMP. Well, if an adversary knows that, he can actually redirect it to one in the other room, which is obviously not something you want. But The really interesting part comes when you have differences in configuration between devices in two different areas. So for instance, if I have a UPS in room A and a UPS in room B, and they're set up with different settings, for instance, the input and output voltages are different, I can actually redirect requests from A to B or B to A, and I can actually cause some interesting issues. So the next thing that comes up is, you know, how do you mitigate these issues? Well, one of the easiest ways to mitigate this issue is just protect the transport layer. So if you're using something like IPsec, or if you're using TSM, which is another security model, we've been talking about USM, which is the user-based security model for SNMP. But TSM is the transport-based security security model. And one of the things that it does is it uses TLS. So using something like this will protect discovery, and because discovery can't be modified or can't be tampered with, it winds up protecting the rest of the protocol. One of the issues with using either of these approaches is that sometimes you're going to run into devices that don't support either of these protocols. I have yet to see a device actually that supports TSM instead of USM. And in these cases, some of these devices may be old, some of them no longer being supported. You know, if you have an air conditioner, you have it more than 3 or 4 years. You don't just toss it out when it goes out of support. And in some of these cases, it's really hard to upgrade these devices. So they may never wind up, you know, getting support for these protocols. So what do you do? Well, the easiest way to fix it is that you just don't trust discovery. You can actually put in the SNMP engine IDs, those unique identifiers, by hand, which is a real hassle, but it can be done, and it'll allow you to continue carrying on communication with them securely, and it solves the problems we mentioned. The other thing that's worth mentioning is that discovery is actually used for clock synchronization as well in SNMP, and it's probably still useful for that because the clock synchronization actually is authenticated and usually occurs after the engine IDs are exchanged. But the main point to this particular change is that you can put this change out without having to actually modify any of the agents that are running the protocol. You only need to modify the manager. So, questions? Sorry.
All right.
Yes.
Your solutions, first of all, if your key is compromised, you're hosed anyway. Because your first solution is, well, we could protect the compromised key transport with IPsec, but we have compromised keys. So you're only depending that you have some other uncompromised key to protect your against a possibility of a compromised key. That didn't make any sense to me at all. The SNMP thing probably doesn't work well if your keys have been compromised. Yeah, that's kind of true of all security. It is its own security transport. The idea, when you said that you can't distinguish agents,
yes,
that didn't make a lot of sense to me because every agent tells you, no, I'm a printer agent. It tells you, I'm a laptop agent. The OIDs are significantly different for each of those kinds of things. You know when you're talking that you're trying to set your UPS, that whether or not you're talking to a UPS.
That's correct, but you don't know which UPS you're talking to is the point I was trying to make.
There are fields for the MAC address that are available in every single SNMP engine, then it's a required minimal field. So
I agree.
If you are setting up your, I don't know, I ran an ISP once upon a time, and we actually input the MAC address of every device that we were talking to because we didn't want people to just drop their own laptop into our network and us begin monitoring it. The monkey in the middle attack, I don't know whether you tested your managers, but what did they do when they received two answers? Because in your monkey in the middle attack, you're sending out the query and you're getting back an answer from your laptop in the middle, and you're getting back an answer from the device that you are trying to monitor. So what happened in that case?
I'm sorry, explain that again.
All right. You're monkey in the middle attack. You just talked about the discovery queries very, very early in the beginning.
Yes.
So at that point, you're sending a discovery. Next slide.
Yeah.
Or, well,
it was several, but yeah, I got you.
All right, there you go. You're sending a discovery request. The discovery request, back.
Sorry.
The discovery request arrives at your monkey in the middle. It also arrives at your target. The target is responding, and so is your monkey in the middle. So you're getting two responses
to the
network monitor.
You misunderstood. The discovery request is that's coming back. The discovery response is not a duplicate. It is you're modifying the packet that you received from the target. And then
in order to do that, you have to actually physically insert your attacker between the target and the switch. So it's not your traditional monkey in the middle attack. You're actually putting a physical insertion in the wire, cutting the wire, putting a couple of new ends on. A physical attack is a lot more difficult than your typical, I've plugged my monkey in the middle in to the local switch, and so I'm now on the same network. You need to distinguish those kinds of attacks. That's a physical attack is a lot harder.
Okay. Yes, that is what I was using in the particular.
Did you test it with just plugging into? I mean, we have run into people who wander into.
When I tested it, I was bridging the network. So, for instance, I had a target and a helper, mm-hmm. and the attacker simply bridged the network, and then. As the packets flowed through the attacker, I modified them. That was how it was tested.
Okay, yeah, I understand that. I'm just saying that our more typical scenario is somebody has wandered into a campus room and decided, oh, look, there's an empty Ethernet jack. Let's see what kind of stuff is flowing on that network and plugs in because we forgot to turn the jack off at the switch. As opposed to, this is a physical attack. You actually have to put your own switch in between the manager and the target, which is going to be bloody difficult if you don't have access to the machine room.
Can you not use ARP poisoning?
Maybe.
That's kind of what I was going for, was that you were redirecting requests through your host, and I don't think you necessarily have to have a physical connection to do that. I was under the impression you could do that with ARP poisoning, but I...
Only if you could keep beating it.
Oh, yeah, certainly.
Anyway, those were some of my observations is that, yeah, if your key is compromised, adding IPsec to, you know, cover your traffic isn't helping. That's just another key to compromise. It's not...
The point was that if one key becomes compromised, it compromises all of the keys, though.
That's because we have a tendency to use the same key for all of our devices.
What I'm telling you here is that they're not all using the same key. They're all using different localized keys. At least that's the intention of the protocol. But you can force it to use whatever key you want as the adversary. The key that resides on every single machine, it's not a shared key. It's different. They're created based on the device identifier.
I understand that. We use the same base key, and then it's just... Anyway, you're saying that as long as you can't tell the difference between the fact that you're no longer talking to the printer or you're no longer talking to the UPS because you didn't bother to look at the MAC address and you didn't look at the agent ID type, then you could, once you have gotten a compromised key for a particular device, well... But that would be true if you used IPsec to cover the transport instead. You're just moving the place of the compromise to a different place.
If I may address the earlier thing you said about the MAC address, that's not, as far as I'm aware, that's not something that you typically monitor when you set up a system like Nagios or Cacti or any of these other...
I've never used Nagios.
Okay. Have you used Zabbix or any of the other, at least none of the ones I've had previous experience with using have, it's never been... clear to me that you would want to, you know, just outright monitor the MAC address via SNMP. Now, certainly, if you do like a bulk get, you're going to get back the MAC address, and you can parse that out and take a look at it. But in general, the kind of things you look at are you pick out, you know, I want to know this particular piece of information, and the MAC address has never been, you know, something that was something that you wanted to monitor long term, at least in where I worked. So.
Okay, and where did you work?
I worked for GTRI.
Okay, and that didn't mean anything to me.
Sorry,
okay.
The Georgia Tech Research Institute.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. I actually, once upon a time, ran an actual ISP, but it was a small ISP. Google may not actually pay attention to
and
the
I'm not
MAC
saying
address
you don't.
Of every device and making sure that they're talking to whom they think they're talking to. I don't know how they set up and manage their data centers. I just know how I set up and manage mine.
I understand.
I don't know if you can answer this, but do you have any insight about how many people are actually relying on SMP3 for security versus just not even trying to do any security at all because they're relying on their firewall to protect them?
That's a really good question. There haven't been a whole lot of studies done. I think the only paper I've been able to find on talking about the relative use of SNMPv3 was a paper from about 2007, and they looked at three different companies to see what the relative use of versions 1, 2C, and 3 were, and they found that it was mostly 2C. But since then, probably in the past couple of years, it's really seemed like version 3's had an uptick. I know that a lot of things didn't have support like 5 years ago when I looked, and now I'm seeing support for these things. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's become more prevalent. And again, they only looked at three companies.
Yeah.
So it's really an open question.
Yeah, so the impression I get is if people really care about security, they'd be doing the IPsec thing. And if they don't, then they might not even be using SNMP version 3 anyway.
That's fair. But I think the other thing is if you really want to do any kind of configuration with it, for instance, if you want to use any SNMP sets, even if you have it firewalled, it still seems kind of questionable to use version 2C or version 1 because really all you need there is the community string, and then you can set configuration remotely. So if you want to make use of any kind of any of those features, it really seems like that's something you'd use 3 for, even behind the firewall, in my opinion. But
thanks, speaker again, please.
Sorry.